Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering. I'm joined from our Galway studio by Fianna Fáil Senator and party spokesperson on foreign and European affairs, Lisa Chambers, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, and party spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment, Philip Ryan, political editor of the Irish Independent, and Liam Herrick, executive director with the Irish Council of Civil Liberties. Lisa Chambers, to you first. We've had less than 24 hours to digest this news about RTE. Where do you think the blame lies?
Yeah, I think we were all really shocked to see what came out yesterday in terms of the overpayment to Ryan Tuberty of RTE, payments that were not disclosed to the public, were not disclosed to the Oireachtas, to the government, and the government seemed to have been misled on how much was being paid. And there seems to be some sort of accounting techniques used to try and reduce the payment on paper, but clearly there was more going through to the account. So I just want at the outset to say that from what I've been hearing over the last number of hours is that regular, ordinary RTE staff are absolutely gutted with what's happened. Many of those, all of them have taken a pay cut over the last number of years. So they're reeling from this information, this news that came out yesterday. And their organisation is under the spotlight for the reasons you don't want to be under the spotlight. And it's affecting the entire organisation and all of the ordinary staff that work really, really hard to produce public service broadcasting that we all need and that we all want. So I just want to put that at the outset. I think there are questions to be asked as to the true nature and the full nature of the deal, because we don't know the full details, and that will be teased out, I'm sure, in the coming days ahead. We need to know who signed off on it, who thought this was a good idea. I don't know how they thought this wouldn't be discovered at some point. And I think there are questions to be asked now. Does it extend to any other person beyond the person identified yesterday, Mr. Tuberty? Was there any other similar type arrangements in place for anybody else? Ultimately, we need RTE. They are the public broadcaster. They are well trusted, and that trust has been undermined because of this story, but we need to get that restored. And the service provided to the state in terms of reporting on matters of public interest and current affairs and news reporting and sport and all of that is so, so valuable to our country. So, you know, that service and the organisation is much bigger than the small number involved in all of this, and RTE will survive this, but it has to do a lot of work to repair trust. And I think those that are responsible, there needs to be accountability as to who made this decision, and does it extend any further? Because at the end of all of this, it's public money that's being spent. We're consistently being asked by RTE to give them more money, that they're under pressure financially, and we have to justify to the public the money that we spend on the public service broadcaster. So as I said, I fully support public service broadcasting. I think RTE is a really important organisation for our democracy, for our country, and it will survive this because it has to survive this. But accountability is absolutely key, and we need the full details. No more hiding information, no more hiding figures, full transparency and full details. And I know that Minister Martin, the Minister with responsibility for this department, has asked these questions and will get to the bottom of this, as I'm sure public accounts will as well.
All right. RTE said it conducted an internal review of its top 10 most highly paid, and the review found that the full cost had been correctly reported, Louise O'Reilly. They say it'll now be independently and externally reviewed. How soon does that need to be published? And when it says externally reviewed, does it need to be reviewed again after that?
Oh, for God's sake, there can't be that many reviews, Colm. I mean, really, the issue here is one of, I would say, RTE senior management speaking out of both sides of their mouth. So on the one hand, they're at the Joint Directors Committee and they're looking for more money and they're pleading the poor mouth. They're then going into rooms with their own staff talking about pay cuts while putting out press releases saying that the top earners are taking massive pay cuts. Meanwhile, not disclosed in their accounts, we see that there's a bespoke deal for what we know now, one person. We need to find out if there are, and I think it does take an independent review to find out if there are other individuals that are involved in this, because I think people want to know. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of people who work for the national broadcaster earn very, very ordinary amounts of money, and they now find themselves caught up in this. And I'm sure they're all sitting here this morning while they're working, also thinking about the times when they sat in rooms with people and were told, well, lads, you're going to have to shoulder a pay cut, but don't worry, because the top people are going to be taking a pay cut as well. It now turns out that at least one of the top people wasn't taking taken the pay cut to the extent that it was publicised. And I'd say people are very, very sore about that. I know the RTE Group of Unions, I think, is meeting today, or the NUJ is meeting today. And I'm sure that they will have something to say about this. But it is not acceptable. And, you know, let's bear in mind, the senior management from RTE were at the Public Accounts Committee yesterday. They must have known about this. They walked out and said absolutely nothing about it. So Brian Stanley has written to the other, he's the chair of the Public Accounts Committee, the Sinn Féin TD, and he has written to all of the members of the Public Accounts Committee now to say they need to hold an urgent meeting with RTE in relation to this, because we need to get to the bottom of the full facts.
Philip Ryan, in terms of a forum in which the questions need to be answered, Brian Stanley, the chair of the Public Accounts Committee, was out on Morning Ireland earlier, and he said, who set it up? Who signed off on this deal? Who knew? Are there other cases? How long? Why did it take so long to find it out? And where is the current Director General when all of these questions need to be answered? Is the Public Accounts Committee the best place to get this out in the open?
I think it's one forum that can be used, and it is the nature of what they do as a committee is looking into how taxpayer money is spent. So, and it does seem it's always a fulsome debate in the Public Accounts Committee, and there's a lot of questioning
robust
that goes on
as well.
Robust as well. So I think that's the direction to go for now. I think there's also, though, on the government side of things, the minister, she's going to be out now. I think she's doing a doorstep as we speak, and may address some of these questions. But there is a lot to be spoken about and detailed around the timelines on this. So the minister has told us she knew in March of some issue, but we don't know exactly how much she knew then and what she did in the intervening period between, that's a good, is it 4 months since March? So look, I think there is questions there, and the government will have to have direct contact, which will happen, we're told, on Monday with RTE and with the decision makers in here. So look, I think there's just a lot more information to come out, and it's the best for everybody involved that it's as transparent as possible.
Liam, it's a public service broadcaster, RTE. There's a public trust issue. The public pays for it. They have a right to get answers. In the mission statement, RTE says it will act transparently, act in the open. This is the direct opposite of that.
I mean, it's a staggering contrast the last 24 hours between what RTE journalists are doing in covering the story and the invisibility of RTE management. You know, that's just completely not tenable. And the context here is the controversy over the pay rates for the top presenters in RTE has been an item of public controversy for at least 10 years. And it was clear that the political system and the public wouldn't tolerate people being paid over $500,000 a year. So RTE management came out and said, OK, we're changing it. Mm. Like, for the last 2 years, they've been saying that the top earner was at 440, and we now know that they were at 515. And there's a bigger context, that the issue of how RTE structures its pay between employees and private contractors has been a controversy at the Workplace Relations Commission for at least 15 years. So in those two contexts, somebody in management made decisions which seem pretty extraordinary, and there's nobody here to answer them. So I think that this is a profound crisis, and you know, we can't wait another couple of days for a senior manager to come out and explain it.
That's where the cost is born, Louise, isn't it? Because of all of the issues that are talked about the financing of, as RTE as an organisation, the people who bear the brunt of it are the people who are on short-term contracts, who are the quickest to be dropped, and indeed independent producers to RTE whose work may not be commissioned in the event that the well runs dry.
Yeah, and that's not acceptable. Let's not forget, it's only last year that RTE had to make a settlement of 1.2 million with the revenue commissioners in relation to bogus self-employment. This is an issue that was raised, I think it was nearly a decade ago now, by my colleagues Marilyn MacDonald and David Cullinan on the Public Accounts Committee. So this is something about which elected representatives have been seeking answers. I would love to know how much information Minister Martin has, and hopefully she will share that. We know that she was aware of some of it. I'm sure she's going to tell us today what it was that she was actually doing about it. But the fact remains that for an awful lot of people, and there'll be jibes, and there'll be snarky little remarks to people. They say, oh, you're an RTE now, you must be on the gravy train. The vast majority of people working in here are earning very, very modest, ordinary wages, and yet everybody's talking about massive high earners. When RTE management had said they had tackled the high earners, they clearly haven't. And as Liam has said, and he's right, where are they now? Where are the senior managers in RTE to come to answer these questions? So they will have to appear in front of the Public Accounts Committee, and they will have to answer for that. And there will be other forums as well, I'd say, where they will be called to account.
Well, as I said, they're invited for interview here if they want to reach us before 12 o'clock, and we'll no doubt see the contents of that external review when the time comes. Lisa Chambers, another debacle going on at the moment is the Children's Hospital. The two questions remaining is, when is that hospital going to be built and opened, and how much is it going to cost?
Well, I mean, the story that came out about the Children's Hospital, I think over the course of that day, I think we got a fuller picture, and it wasn't the big issue that I think we were thought it was at the outset, and certainly when I was reading RT that morning. So there are potential issues with 11 of the operating theatres, but they there's no decision yet as to whether any works are required, and that's being reviewed by the hospital board and the design team. But that's in the context of there being over 700 rooms that have ventilation, and these are 11 of those, and more than 4,500 clinical rooms. So it is, it's a huge
project. The board for the construction
of
the hospital is waiting for a programme of works from the contractor who are building this, and they haven't got it yet.
Yeah, that's connected. They're connected, I suppose, the two issues. So yes, the board, the BAM or the contractors, they are required to provide a programme of works to the hospital board to show how they intend to complete the remaining 20%, because 80% of the hospital is actually built. They are due to deliver the hospital by the end of next year, well, mid next year, so that it can be fully open by the end of next year. And they've said they will do that. The hospital board said they expect them to do that. So the contractor needs to give a final date. People will appreciate, obviously, the people actually building the hospital are the ones that can give the date in terms of when they'll be able to hand the keys over. But yes, you're correct. BAM, the contractor, haven't provided that programme of works. That's in breach of contract. So they have been asked to provide this programme of works. And until they do that, the hospital board are going to withhold 15% of payment, which is part of the contract agreement, until that programme is provided.
Right. Spring of next year to be fully opening and functioning is gone as a deadline, is it?
Well, no, spring of next year is when it's supposed to be handed over by the contractor, and then there will be probably tidy up works. But by the end of next year, we're told by the hospital board that that's when the hospital is due to be delivered.
Louisa Riley.
And that hasn't changed. So the story didn't change delivery. And the contractor said as well as the hospital board, the contractor also said that this potential work that may be needed will not affect delivery date.
Okay, so the delivery date that was quoted by government recently was March 2024. So that's disappeared like snow off a ditch. Same as the amounts of money that we're going to be spending on this. I do think the government's attempt at nothing to see here isn't really working.
Well, it's not just coming from the government, is it? It's from the hospital board.
Saying, you know, as Lisa's just said there, that the only the contractor can say when it's going to be finished. I mean, really, the person paying the contractor should have some idea.
They have asked Louise for the programme of works. That's the debate we're having, is that's a breach of contract.
The people who are paying for it should have some idea of when it's going to be built, and they don't. So I do think, you know, we're not talking about just 11 rooms. We're talking about operating theatres. We're talking about places where the children who have been left for years without treatment for their scoliosis can finally be able to go to get that treated. And now we're talking about another missed deadline on behalf of the state. And I don't think that is acceptable. The government do not seem to be very hands-on when it comes to this. In fact, my colleague Piers Doherty had an exchange with Minister Stephen Donnelly yesterday at the Finance Committee, and the Minister was very much hands-off. I think they need to be hands-on. We're talking about billions of taxpayers' money here being spent, potentially the most expensive hospital ever built, certainly one of the most expensive hospitals ever built. It's still not delivered, and another date has slipped. That's just not acceptable.
All right, Philip Ryan.
Yeah, look, with all these things, with these projects, and we've seen it over the years, I don't know if it's the Irish government or a soft touch, but look, all these big projects, we're talking about T2 out in Dublin Airport, the Lewis, the M50, it always goes over.
Even IT projects, PPARs famously back in the day.
Yeah, all these things, they just always soar. But then they get done and we stop talking about it. Sure, everybody wants to make sure they're in T2 rather than T1 when they're going out to the airport. The M50 works quite well sometimes compared to what was there before. And the Lewis is great. So look, and the Children's Hospital, it is a fantastic looking building when you drive up that way by Rialto. And hopefully when it is done and dusted, that it's all about treating the kids and it helps the people that was
it's
built
an
and
issue.
Intended for.
The big issue is contracts, isn't it? Where the risk is managed, Liam Herrick, in a contract, and who should bear the risk if there is an overrun?
Well, most of the focus in this is understandably on the cost part of it, you know, but we got drawn into the Children's Hospital a few years ago when it emerged that when they were tendering for CCTV cameras in the system, that they ended up buying Hikvision Chinese facial recognition technologies for the Children's Hospital, top of the range, expensive ones, which were in violation of European law. And the justification was that this would be a good way of preventing the abduction of children from a hospital by having a facial recognition system in the hospital for newborn babies. And it's just a little snippet that there might be problems with the stages in our procurement processes, that as well as not managing cost, we're also not identifying risks and problems and compliance and legal issues early in the process. There was a bill proposed in the Shannon about 2 years ago by the Civic Engagement Group, the Procurement Contract Preparation and Award Criteria Bill, which was a very sensible idea, I think, to really put proper oversight in public procurement for large projects, because we clearly have a problem.
Right. Seeing as you mentioned cameras, a matter close to your heart, why don't you stay on that subject? What did you make of the body-worn cameras for Gardaí, something that seemed to be, I suppose, a point of issue between the Green Party in government and Fine Gael, whether these cameras would have facial recognition capabilities? That's now been hived off as an issue. So are you now OK with Gardaí wearing body-worn cameras?
No, ICCL's position on body-worn cameras is we're not convinced that they'll deliver the benefits. It won't be a good value investment for the public. But if the Oireachtas is in favour of them, and there's law been put before the Oireachtas for quite some time, they should proceed with a pilot. Let's test it and see how it works out and build in the proper safeguards. The issue of facial recognition technology is a whole different one. There's European law which says it's not possible, it's illegal. There's very serious human rights and privacy concerns. Many countries are banning law enforcement use of it. And until last weekend, what the government was planning on doing was getting agreement within Cabinet to go ahead with this, producing amendments at the last minute because a year after they first announced it, they haven't published a word, and then guillotining the legislation before the summer break. So that's been halted. That would have been an absolutely outrageous thing to do, but it clearly was their plan. Right. So now at least the Oireachtas has a chance to actually examine all of these questions. It's going to be very difficult for the government to introduce facial recognition technology in a way that's compatible with European law.
All right. Lisa Chambers, are you glad that it's been split off, albeit late in the day, and seemingly following a robust discussion in Cabinet?
I am. I would have significant concerns. I would share Liam's concerns around this. It's not something to be rushed through in any way or to be taken lightly. I mean, body cams are one thing, but facial recognition, we know there are potential issues with that and the ethics around it as well, and to make sure it's used properly if we're going to go down that road. But it certainly merits considerable debate in the Oireachtas. It will now get that. I am very, very relieved, being honest, that has been hived off, as you've put it, and separated out, because there's just a lot to pick through there, and the Irish Council for Civil Liberties are always very good at highlighting those potential challenges with stuff like this, with issues like this. So there will be a debate on this, and I think you will see, I think it'll be a very robust debate across both houses. I think there will be lots of varying views on this. We won't reach consensus on something like this.
All right, Louise O'Reilly, are you glad that it's been hived off, first of all, but would you like to see at least the issue of facial recognition cameras being considered to be given to Gardaí?
I have serious concerns about the use of facial recognition technology. We had a session earlier in the week at the Enterprise, Trade and Employment Committee in relation to artificial intelligence in the workplace, and I came away from that thinking there is more. There is a lot more that we do not know, but this kind of technology, the AI, is moving incredibly fast. I think it was very disingenuous of the government to try to tie the two issues together, the body cams and the facial recognition technology, because I think there is broad support for body camera technology to be used by An Garda Síochána. I think nobody wants to see a situation, and we've seen it, where the only people that don't have a camera when there are incidents are members of An Garda Síochána. So I think we need to put that to one side. And Liam is right, we need to pilot it because we need to make sure we get it right and learn the lessons from any pilot. But in relation to the facial recognition technology, I do think it's important that we have the debate. I think the debate should be informed by expert opinion, and I think we should have the debate in the Dáil and at committee. But I don't know if we will debate it to a point where I would be comfortable with it. All right. I think the tendency or the potential for racial profiling and others within the use of facial recognition technology has been highlighted at a European and international level, and we'd be very foolish to ignore that.
Philip Ryan, the other law enforcement issue is the State of Play with the Offences Against the State Act and the Special Criminal Court. There was a report produced on us. What happened?
Yeah, just on the facial recognition,
yeah,
just quickly,
it, yeah.
That the thing that jumped out at me on the entire issue is that Fine Gael spent an awful lot of political capital on this one, trying to pursue, I suppose, what they see as their core voters' kind of law and order policies. The Garda Commissioner has asked for this, and they see, like, we have to force it through. But I think I think most reasonable people would like a little bit more of a debate on this, whether you're for law and order or not. Like, you don't want to become this vast surveillance society like that you see in the movies.
We're all for law and order, like, at the same time, you know?
I don't think we'd be debating if we're for or against law and order. I think we'd be debating whether or not the use of facial recognition technology will bring benefits. And I think there's a lot of people that think it won't. And, you know, maybe we need to hear from a variety of voices.
There is the idea that if you can put a picture into if you have 70 hours of CCTV, that there's some way you can find people.
Yeah, but there are other implications. Yeah. But bring us up to speed on the Offences Against the State Act.
Yes. So,
Criminal Court and the discussions around that.
Yeah, look, the Sinn Féin has called for their review. They're taking ownership of this one. And the government said they'd look into the Offences Against the State Act, which underpins the Special Criminal Court, non-jury trials. And they did this. They asked for an external review and it delivered this week. But it was a split review. So we have essentially two reports on the Special Criminal Court. One, which was the majority view, which was overseen at the chair of the Justice Pert, that said that it should remain. We should still have non-jury courts, but there should be a little bit more oversight on how they're operated. Then there was the minority report, which said, look, they said you can't sit on the fence on this issue. This is the other two academics, Professor Green and
Donogh O'Connor.
And Donogh O'Connor.
From NUIG.
Yes. And they essentially said, look, you can't sit on the fence on Special Crimes Court. You're either for it or against it. And they were clearly against it. So we don't really have an outcome as to what the government should do next.
Liam Herrick?
I mean, the key thing is that all of the members of the group, both the majority and minority, all said that the Offences Against the State Act should be repealed and replaced with a new system of law, which is the same thing that the Hederman Committee said in 2002. So everybody has agreed that's looked at this, that the current law, which dates back to 1939, is not fit for purpose. Where they differ is that one group has said they're looking at the existing system, they're looking at the Hederman recommendations and some of the case law of the Irish court since then, and they're trying to replace it with a system that's almost exactly like the current system and retains most of the essential aspects.
Right. The 1939 legislation goes back to the emergency and it allowed for military officers to sit
and
on a court in potential and internment, etc.
The minority take a view that let's look at the problem. The problem is we have a constitutional right to jury trial and we have the risk of a jury being intimidated. Let's look at best international practice. Let's look at how other countries deal with this, how you manage to keep a trial by jury in the maximum number of cases and do things like jury protection, anonymous juries, remote juries and so on. So I think there's two different... One is a much more ambitious programme of reform. The bottom line is, though, the minister hasn't even committed to legislating and introducing new legislation yet. She said she's going to go back and talk to the guards and the DPP. We know what they think. This should now go into the Justice Committee. Let's take our time and let's design the best possible system of anti-terrorism law.
All right. Lisa Chambers, where do you stand on this? Because concerns have been brought up. Liam Herrick is proposing a look at reforms and it being scrutinised in the Justice Committee. There are concerns, as you said, about facial recognition technology. These are pretty basic assumptions when it comes to civil liberties as well, the right to a jury trial. What's the harm in taking the long approach to this?
Yeah, so I think at the outset, obviously, I welcome the fact that the review was done and that was initiated by the Department of Justice and the Minister. As Philip said, it didn't produce a result that everybody agreed upon. So there were four looking for reform and two that wanted to get rid. So it's not conclusive. What the minister is going to do is to set up a consultative process. It's not just going to be the DPP and the Gardaí. The AG will be involved, relevant departments, the court service, to, I suppose, inform a substantive response to this. I think you will see changes, but it is important to remember that I wish we didn't need these types of non-jury trials, but they have served the state very well over the last number of years because we have certain criminals, unlike you or I, they don't fear the regular courts. But the non-jury court, the Special Criminal Court, that does work in those certain circumstances. We've had gangland criminality that couldn't be dealt with in other ways, IRA criminality as well. So it has served the state well, and some of the most hardened criminals were brought through this process to the benefit of the public and public safety. So let's not disregard all of that.
All right.
Notwithstanding that, I would love to think, and I think that we are perhaps in a different space now, that we could look at reforming this. But as you can see from the result of that review group, and what the minister is doing. There is no, this will not be rushed. It will be considered. It will be done listening to lots of voices. And whatever reform is brought through on this, if that's what is to happen, it will be done based on evidence, based on fact, and based on a consultative process.
All right. Louise O'Reilly, your party, once upon a time favoured abolition. You've been more equivocal on it and abstained on votes on the Special Criminal Court and the Offences Against the State Act. What approach do you favour on this?
Well, I think the Liam is right when he says there was unanimity among the people on the review panel, and Justice Pert, I think, did a very good job in terms of the report. But there was unanimity in terms of the repeal of the existing legislation. I think there is broad recognition that it is no longer fit for purpose. It's not acceptable to have to keep, every year renewing legislation. It should be put on a permanent footing. What Sinn Féin has said and said repeatedly and consistently, we had called for this review eventually, and I want to pay tribute to my colleague Martin Kenny, who engaged with the then Minister Charlie Flanagan, and indeed Pa Daly, who has taken up, and they have been very heavily engaged in this, because we do need to get this right. We want our courts to be equipped with 21st century powers to fight 21st century crime, right, essentially.
But would you have been better sticking to your original position of abolition when at least two members of this believe it's time for abolition? Have you been, I suppose, abandoned it too early before the report?
So what we had looked for was the review, and we had abstained on the basis that the government had acceded to our request in relation to the review. Now what will happen off the back of that review, and as I say, there was a certain amount of discord, but there was a certain amount of agreement, and what will happen now as off the back of that will be that debate that we need to have within the Dáil, and will be legislation brought forward from the government that we'll have an opportunity to engage with.
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, things have moved on in Northern Ireland and in the UK as well as here. So now we have a situation in the North where most of the problematic aspects of the special here, the belief evidence, the privileged secret evidence, and the DPP having the power to refer, they're all gone in the North, and they've almost abolished non-jury trials. So if we went with the majority approach, we'd end up a situation where the rights in the South were far less than the North. And I think we really need to be ambitious.
I have to interrupt you there for some breaking news. The RTE, as we've just got an urgent statement, the RTE board has issued a statement. It says, the RTE board confirms that Dee Forbes, the Director General, was suspended from her employment on Wednesday, the 21st of June, 2023. There are processes ongoing, and RTE must be mindful of its legal responsibilities and the rights of individuals. RTE will not be commenting further on this issue at this time. Now, I don't think we, given the legal issues involved there, that we will go for any further comment on that until we see any further news from behind that. That's all from us for this week. Thanks very much for listening. You can catch up on anything you might have missed on this morning's show on the RTE radio app. Today's programme was produced by Rachel Graham. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Research was by Ciarán Dunn. The broadcast coordinator was Louise Kerr. And on sound, we had Liam Mullen. Thanks very much from me, Colm O'Mungay. Now it's over to Louise Duffy.